It's Current State on 90.5 WKAR and every weekday at noon on AM 870 WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. Welcome back. We will talk about Spartan football and where it stands before the end of the hour with Current Sports. Al Martin will learn about a dark arts celebration and concert happening this week in Lansing as well. What are the dark arts anyway? Your mind probably goes in a half a dozen different directions when you hear that phrase. We'll learn more here in just a few minutes. In 29 days, America elects its next president, but even more hangs in the balance. Here in Michigan, voters will determine 14 U.S. representatives who will serve in the Congress and more than 100 members of the State House of Representatives. There are also two positions on the State Supreme Court, six members of the Michigan Court of Appeals, university boards, and more. We've invited back two Michigan journalists, one from each side of the political spectrum here, to share their thoughts on some of the contests most important to mid-Michigan. Together, they comprise the Two Chicks Speakers Bureau. Susan Demas is the editor and publisher of the Inside Michigan Politics newsletter. Welcome back, Susan.
Hi, Mark.
And by phone from Saginaw, Kathy Hoekstra, who writes for Watchdog.org. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
It's great to have you back. Before we get to the main reason you're here, let's get your thoughts on last night's presidential debate. Was there a winner? And if so, why? Susan, we'll start with you.
Well, it was a debate unlike anything I have ever seen. And, you know, I've been covering politics for a dozen years now. I think that if I had to score the debate, I would tend to agree with the respondents of the CNN poll that Hillary Clinton did win. I think that Trump decided to go very personal, starting with that press conference they held before. He was on the attack. I think maybe he assured some of the wavering Republicans. I just don't see how he made the sale to undecideds.
Kathy Hoekstra, what about you?
You know, I agree with you. I agree with Susan. I do think that if people thought Donald Trump and his campaign were already one foot in the grave, I don't think he put the other foot in there last night. I do think Hillary Clinton came out the winner, but like Susan said, she was definitely on the on the defense. And I think getting all that video Billy Bush stuff out of the way in the first whatever 20 or 30 minutes of the debate was a good thing. I think it was good to see a few things get brought up: healthcare, tax policy, some foreign policy. But I think what happens with Trump, and this is maybe just me, is he engages so much, and it's just a stylistic thing. He engages so much in hyperbole. You know, nobody has more respect for women than I do. I mean, when you get there, it's like that just negates all the things you just said, you know, that actually, you know, it negates your apology. It negates all the things that might actually get you some of those points with the undecideds, like Susan mentioned. So I agree with Susan on this one, and I'll be really interested to see debate three and how they wrap things up.
I hesitate to subject our listeners to still more audio from the debate. We will move on to more of a Michigan focus, but let's listen to Anderson Cooper trying to get an answer from Donald Trump on the groping comments. Here he is.
Are you saying that what you said on that bus 11 years ago, that you did not actually kiss women without consent or grope women without consent?
I have great respect for women. Nobody has more respect for women than I do.
So for the record, you're saying you've never did that?
I said things that, frankly, you hear these things, I said, and I was embarrassed by it, but I have tremendous respect for women.
Have you ever done those things?
Women have respect for me, and I will tell you, no, I have not, and I will tell you that I'm going to make our country safe.
So he denied doing it, and it was kind of wrapped in this meandering style, kind of elusive style that he has. What will the final result be of this Access Hollywood bombshell, Susan?
Well, I think that the fact that this tape came out, there seemed to be more tapes that potentially could come out, which could reinforce. And his little stunt with women who have accused former President Clinton of sexual misconduct, I think all of that has traditionally not helped Republicans with independent women, even with Republican women. I think there's a real risk in going down this road. And nobody thinks Trump is a Boy Scout. Everybody thinks he said more things about women, maybe other groups. I'm not sure we've heard the last of any of this.
And anything to add to that, Kathy?
Well, I agree. We haven't heard the last of it. I do think it's a little bit telling that Billy Bush has been suspended from his job on the Today Show on NBC for a while. So I think, you know, there's a little bit of, Billy Bush is taking his share of criticism, too, for really sort of baiting Donald Trump back during that interview. So I don't think the discussion on that end is over either. There's going to be a whole another discussion on media and ethics and things like that. As far as bringing up the Clinton women prior to the debate, I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. I think it's a few months too late, and it looks too knee-jerk reaction to the Billy Bush stuff. I think there are stories that, as the women said, one of them said after the debate, you know what, our voices had been stomped on for so long. This was a chance for us to have a voice. I think it all should have happened much, much earlier in the campaign. Again, this is not the end of all of this. I agree with that.
Let's begin to move the focus back here to Michigan. Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly says he is rescinding his support for Donald Trump and will write in Mike Pence as a potential gubernatorial candidate. What impact will his change of heart have? What could it have, Susan?
Well, it seems like the lieutenant governor was trying to have it both ways last night, because he put out a statement that he thought that Trump did very well and won the debate, even though he just rescinded his endorsement. So he very well might have gotten some pushback from Republican donors, from the Republican base. Already, he was in kind of a precarious position to run for governor. Nobody thinks that he can successfully take on Attorney General Bill Schuette in a primary. Muddying the issue with the presidential nominee, I think, is not helpful. And he seems to be floundering to find his voice. Unlike his boss, Rick Snyder, who has been anti-Trump from the beginning, Kelly endorsed him fairly early on after it became clear that he was the front runner. And I think he is struggling to see what to do.
Kathy, what do you make of the Kelly removal of his support for Trump?
Yeah, I agree with Susan. I do think it's, I think he's doing what he thinks is going to be popular, obviously. If he's running for governor in 2018, he's going to want to look like he did the right thing back in 2016. Trump's remarks, all of this has really, really put any Republican running for governor in Michigan in a tough spot. Bill Schuette just put out a statement saying, it's not clear if he's pulling any of his support. I mean, he came out in support of Trump too, but I think he's being a little more careful about it. So I think it all depends on what happens during the next debate, what happens during the general election. We will see which one of these Kelly or Attorney General Schuette had the right approach on this. And Susan mentioned about a gubernatorial race getting muddled in with the presidential politics. And yeah, that is a very tricky, those are tricky waters to navigate. Because people are looking, that's going to be one, some voters are going to look at that as a litmus test.
Let's move to Michigan's 8th Congressional District, the district covering Lansing and East Lansing here. Republican Mike Bishop pursuing a second term. The Democrats putting up newcomer Susanna Shkreli. What do you see when you look at this race, Susan?
This was initially a targeted race for Democrats, and if you ask them, it still is, although it's certainly fallen down the ladder since their original candidate, their nominee, Melissa Gilbert, the actress, has dropped out due to health reasons. What I find interesting, this is a very diverse seat. I mean, you've got the Lansing portion, then you've got Northern Oakland and Livingston counties, so much more conservative areas. This is unhospitable territory for Democrats, very difficult to win. And Susanna Shkreli is starting way late in the game. But last night, I did see in the run-up to the presidential debate, Mike Bishop putting out a commercial where he touts himself as a champion of kids. It was nicely done, but the one missing element was you did not know he was a Republican. So that says to me that there are some danger signs out there.
He never uses the word Republican in the ad.
Never calls himself a Republican.
I think I saw the ad that you're talking about, but I hadn't noticed that detail.
So perhaps they're just hedging their bets against an anti-Trump tide, but in a seat that seemed extremely safe. That's interesting to me.
Kathy?
Yeah, well, you know, I think the Democrats would probably have a little bit better of a shot had their current candidate been in a lot earlier. I mean, Melissa Gilbert was just an absolute disaster of a candidate to begin with. I think that it was a good thing she dropped out. But unfortunately for the Democrats, it was too late. That's just my opinion on that race.
In the always interesting 7th District, which covers Eaton County, incumbent Republican Tim Walberg facing Democrat Gretchen Driscoll. What's going on here, Susan?
Yeah, this is a pretty wide district. Goes down to the Indiana border, suburbs of Ann Arbor, Monroe, Jackson. Tim Walberg is going for a 5th term. He's a very conservative Republican. He's faced strong challenges before. Gretchen Driscoll has matched him almost completely in fundraising, though, and there's quite the ad war going on. What Democrats are really hoping for is that she can ride an anti-Trump tide, but that's a district where Trump is doing better than in some, so I think it's still going to be a challenge.
Oh, what do you think, Kathy?
Well, I think so, too. I think, you know, incumbents like Tim Walberg, they do have the advantage of, you know what, I was here before Trump, and I have this track record, and, you know, if you can distance yourself from any of the current, Trump circus going on, I think he'll be fine.
Michigan includes one U.S. congressional district that's regarded as a toss-up, in part because the first, up north, is pretty evenly divided between the left and the right. This is all of the UP and the upper third of the lower peninsula. Remind our listeners about the candidates and what's going on there, Susan.
Well, this is an open seat because Congressman Dan Benyshek is stepping down after 3 terms. You have Democrat Lon Johnson, who is the former Michigan Democratic Party chair. And then you have retired Lieutenant General Jack Bergman, a newcomer to the scene who was able to defeat 2 very well-known politicians in the primary. So it's a very interesting dynamic because this is Trump country up there, but Lon Johnson is very strongly Second Amendment. He got the Detroit News endorsement. And a lot of people think that if Democrats can win anywhere, it's got to be in the first.
Kathy Hoekstra, in the first district, what do you see?
Yeah, I agree with you. And I actually spent part of my world living in the first district as well. And it's, you know, you look at the people who have served in that district and who have come along. I mean, you know, Bart Stupak, then you had Congressman Benyshek, and now you have, like Susan said, I mean, faces we have not seen in Congress before. Again, it is a toss-up, and I spent some time, as a matter of fact, I spent the entire Saturday in East Lansing with some friends of mine from up in Gaylord, and even among them, very, very mixed opinions on both of these candidates. So, you know, your guess is as good as mine at this point.
We've got arguably the closest watched race in the Lansing area in the state house is probably the 71st district. There's the repeat of a battle between Republican Tom Barrett and a Democrat who repped the district previously, Teresa Abbott. The race between these 2 years ago was decided by 100-some votes. What do you see happening in the 71st, Susan?
We're already seeing tons of commercials. This could be the top money race as far as the state house goes in the entire state of Michigan. This is a race that Democrats should win on paper because Democratic turnout should be higher. Trump does not do well in the Lansing suburbs. But Tom Barrett is an excellent candidate. He knows how to hit the doors. He has appeal to independent women. And this one is going to potentially be a real nail biter.
Kathy, anything to add there?
Agreed with. I agree completely with Susan on that one. You know, Tom has been knocking on doors relentlessly. He has a good personal story, and you know, he's in the National Guard. He has, you know, served, you know, with his military background. He has a young family, and in terms of his legislative activities, he has done some. He's been able to cross the aisle and sponsor some very good legislation, including and especially one that makes it tough or makes it a lot easier for victims of domestic violence and sexual assault and things like that, easier to break from a telephone contract, which is, you know, if we're going to have this heightened discussion about sexual assault and all these other things. I mean, this is something he can kind of hang his hat on and say, you know what? It doesn't matter what letter you have after your name. This is good policy, and we want to keep victims of domestic violence and in dangerous relationships. We want to keep Michiganders safe. So, I mean, he's got a few other pieces of legislation that he's gotten through the legislature just in his short time as a state representative.
We're down to less than 30 seconds. I do want to ask you one question about the outcome in the Michigan House. Democrats are hoping to at least narrow the margin in the House, and there are some hoping to tip the balance back in the D column. Briefly, Susan, how likely is that?
I think they can narrow the gap. Winning 9 seats, I would put them at about a 1 in 4 chance.
Kathy?
I would say a little bit. I would say more like 1 in 9 or 10. I think, depending on if the Republicans have been able to distance themselves from any Trump negativity, they'll do well.
We want to thank our guest. Susan Demas is editor and publisher of the Inside Michigan Politics newsletter by phone from her home in Saginaw. Kathy Hoekstra, who writes for Watchdog.org. And together, they comprise the Two Chicks Speakers Bureau. Susan and Kathy, thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up on Current State, today is Indigenous Peoples Day in East Lansing. Instead of protesting the traditional Columbus Day as in the past, MSU students are planning a celebration.
We are making strides as a community. We are being more inclusive. We are being more understanding of where everyone's coming from.
We talk with two MSU students who had a role in getting the city to observe a holiday honoring the people who were here before Christopher Columbus. That's coming up on Current State. Well, if you hear the term dark arts, you might think of one of the classes Harry Potter had to take at Hogwarts, but there's a real organization called Michigan Dark Arts, and they're putting on their third annual dark art show and party this Saturday at the Avenue Cafe in Lansing. Here to tell us all about it is one of the creators of Michigan Dark Arts, Tisha King. Hi, Tisha.
Good morning.
And we're also joined by Caddy Jensen, general manager of the Avenue Cafe. Hello and welcome.
Hi there.
And musician Kale Sauter, who will perform at the event. Welcome, Kale.
Hello.
Tisha, how did Michigan Dark Arts get started?
Well, my boyfriend, he owns Eclectic Art Tattoo Gallery on Michigan Avenue, and he has a lot of dark artwork, so we had kind of a lot of artwork kind of building up at our house. So I'm like, we need to find a place to like showcase your art. Mm. So it just kind of spiraled out of that. So that's where we're at, is just asking more people to join us.
Talk to us about the dark aspect, though, of Michigan Dark Arts. What does dark signify? What does it mean in this context?
Well, it can encompass a lot of things, anything from like, you know, skulls and like, you know, just dark imagery to occult themes to maybe, you know, even some sexual content that maybe isn't, you know, suitable for the masses. But we give all those kind of arts just a place to be showcased.
Mm-hmm. Caddy, how did you get involved?
Well, I've worked at the venue for a few years now, and I met Tisha on the first one that she put on.
And why do you enjoy hosting the event at the Avenue Cafe?
It's nice to see all the different diversity in the performers and clientele that we don't normally see that come, especially for the artwork and the bands.
Mm. Cale, your band is playing at the show. Tell us about your band, Cavalcade, here. Are they particularly suited to a dark arts concert?
I would probably say so. I mean, our music definitely touches on some darker themes and even the quiet stuff is a little, you know, spooky or whatever, but... We played one of these before, but this being near Halloween, you know, we had some cool ideas for what we could do for this show.
So. Tisha, you're discouraging people of a particular age and younger from not attending this. What's the cutoff?
18 and over, sure.
18 and over. Give us more of an overview of what's going on here.
Well, we do have the art show that runs from October 1st to October 31st, and that is at the Avenue Cafe. We have our art open / Halloween party, which is Dante's Inferno themed, and that is October 15th. Doors are at 7, and the show starts at 8. And you'll find anything from bands to Michigan independent films are being shown. There's a burlesque performer. There's a drag performer. Bands performing. I mean... lots of vendors, all selling spooky stuff, so there's something for everybody there.
I'm speaking with the co-creator of Michigan Dark Arts, Tisha King, also with Caddy Jensen, general manager of the Avenue Cafe, and musician Cale Sauter. All are involved in the Michigan Dark Arts Show and Party this Saturday at the Avenue Cafe in Lansing. Cale, you've also been involved in organizing other bands to perform, I'm told. Can you tell us about some of the others who will be performing?
Sure, yeah. Some of the other bands that will be performing, we kind of decided to go for a bit of a theme with this one. Sean and Tisha had booked all the bands in the past, and then with this one, with it being so close to Halloween, we thought we might try something different and have all the bands play as other bands, you know, like a Halloween costume, but sort of like, you know, musically speaking. So, we've got Cavalcade and other bands playing will be a band called Fisher King. We have members of other bands kind of combining to play as certain acts. So it'll be an eclectic night musically. But between us and then the other acts, Dead Hour Noise, Dastards, I'm drawing a blank on the last
one.
Hunky Newcomers.
Yeah, the Hunky Newcomers as well will be
Mr.
playing.
Fox
the Hunky
Nights.
Newcomers.
Yeah. Yep. So we'll have some fun. Everyone's playing as someone else, and there will be costumes and everything. So,
Caddy, with this Dante's Inferno theme, what kinds of costumes are you anticipating?
All kinds. Usually there's some pretty good Halloween costumes at the Avenue anyhow.
What are you going to dress up as?
I haven't actually considered it yet. I'm a pretty busy person, but I'm sure I'll find something.
Tisha, what about you?
Well, I've been hearing, because it is Dante's Inferno, people are like, what do you wear to a costume contest or a party like that? So I've just been telling people...
something hellish.
Either come as, you know, a devil or Satan himself,
sure,
if you want, or you could take it down and come as somebody that maybe belongs on one of the nine circles of hell. You know, I don't want to get political, but I have heard that someone is coming as Donald Trump, a.k.a. Greed. So I think it'll be a good time.
Expect to see any of the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. There's a costume idea for you. What's the appeal of this? Describe your personal connection to the dark art concept.
Well, for me, it's just kind of getting to know people and, finding other people
a
that are
a different side of people.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you think about like the arts that we display, a lot of times they aren't for the masses. So when you give those kind of arts a place to kind of like get together and do things, you know, as like a community, you really kind of draw people out of the woodwork, you know, where you wouldn't think a lot of people would be interested in, you know, the darker side of art, but they come out and they're really, really excited about
like
it.
Like minds kind of get to a chance to network in an environment they wouldn't normally.
Yeah. So. Are the bands going to be in costume as well? Cale, is Cavalcade going to be in costume?
Yeah, we'll be in costume and the bands will also be in costume. So we'll be in costume as The Cure. So expect wigs and whatnot. So
yeah, Caddy, is this a more challenging night to manage at the Avenue Cafe than the average night? Or
it won't be at all. No, it'll be great.
Tisha, what's the reception been in the community? What feedback have you gotten from those who participate in these dark art shows?
Just outstanding excitement. People are just really excited to have something to belong to, because a few of our participants, you know, have kind of not found their way comfortably in the, you know, the, I would say, the mass art community. So, you know, they're really kind of excited to find their people. Mm. And I think that that will also kind of just kind of sprout and, you know, we'll get more people involved in the future.
I've been speaking with the co-creator of Michigan Dark Arts, Tisha King, also with Caddy Jensen, general manager of the Avenue Cafe, and musician Kale Sauter. Have a good time this week. Great
Thank
to have you here. Thank you for being
us.
Here.
Yeah,
thanks for having us.
Coming up on Current State, Brigham Young bested MSU on Saturday, 31-14 in East Lansing. The game started with a tribute to two fallen former Spartans. Current sports host Al Martin joins me to break it all down and find out what went wrong for the green and white and what lay ahead with Northwestern. That's coming up on Current State. Just a quick movie recommendation. We journeyed to Ann Arbor over the weekend to take in Ron Howard's Beatles movie, 8 days a week. And if you have an ounce of affection for the Fab Four, it comes recommended. It's not playing everywhere. It's kind of scattered at various theaters around the area, and it's available on Hulu, as it turns out, but recommended. The second Monday in October has traditionally been observed as Columbus Day in this country. In a growing number of cities, though, including East Lansing as of a couple of weeks ago, Columbus Day is now being observed as Indigenous Peoples Day. Current State's Scott Pohl talked with two MSU students who played a role in getting the city to make this change. What's behind the move, Scott?
The idea, Mark, is that historically, Christopher Columbus did not discover America. Lots of people, indigenous people, were already here. I talked with Cassandra Chavrinaw of the MSU North American Indigenous Students Organization, who we'll hear from in a few minutes. But I started with Julia Christensen, an East Lansing native and MSU student, who serves on the city's Human Relations Commission, which sent this resolution to the city council.
I think that most of our conversations about the importance of this revolved around the fact that Columbus is perhaps not a figure we should be putting on a pedestal the way we tend to in this country. He didn't reach North America first. He had a really negative impact on the indigenous populations he did encounter. And while, of course, he's a historical figure we should learn about, perhaps not a historical figure who should have his own federal holiday recognized all over the country. And this is reflected in the fact that other cities around the country have been slowly either replacing the holiday entirely with Indigenous Peoples Day or recognizing them both on the same day. So in the interests of that, that was sort of where the conversation started. And of course, also Indigenous communities in the U.S. and elsewhere have a long history of being marginalized, of being fairly invisible. And we felt that changing the name of the holiday could help elevate those voices and that culture and their history. There was a speaker at the city council meeting who was a member of a local Indigenous community who made a really good point, which is that when we are taught about Native American history in schools, we learn about it in the past tense as if these aren't communities that still exist, and yet they do. In fact, East Lansing and the Lansing area has a relatively significant Indigenous community. So those were sort of the two big reasons we felt that this was an important issue to take on, because Columbus is perhaps not someone we should be celebrating the way that we do, and also because Indigenous people deserve a day that begins to elevate those voices that we've ignored for so long.
Being a college senior, I'd like to know more about how Columbus has been taught in recent years, because when I was in school, we learned all of the things that people my age traditionally know or think they know about Christopher Columbus, that he sailed the ocean blue and discovered America, all of that sort of thing. How is Columbus taught these days in our schools?
Well, we rarely, if ever, got the holiday off. So we'd be in school on Columbus Day, and yet it often didn't come up to a great degree. And I think that these days when Columbus is talked about in schools, there's usually some acknowledgement of some of the negative impacts that he had. Perhaps not explicitly, but he's certainly not lauded in the same way. At least once I was in high school, I think earlier on it was a bit different. But I don't have any standout memories of us doing anything particularly significant for that holiday.
I want to ask you about the genesis of this effort in the city of East Lansing to convert from, if convert's the right word, to convert from observing Columbus Day to Indigenous Peoples Day. When did this effort begin? What did the process take?
Late last fall, so late fall 2015, it was an issue that one of the other commissioners on the Human Relations Commission raised in a meeting that turned into then a conversation about sort of the fact that we all thought this was a good idea. A couple of commissioners who had some time to devote to it then took a month or so and researched other similar resolutions around the country and came back to us in early spring 2016 with a draft resolution based on language and formatting they'd seen in other similar resolutions around the country. From there, we as a commission looked it over, edited it a little bit, and then took it to some local Indigenous leaders, including, for example, NASO here on campus, the North American Indigenous Student Organization, to make sure that the language we were using, the way we were characterizing things, was correct. And then from there, the commission doesn't usually have much business over the summer with so many people being gone from town and things. And we decided that rather than push it through or take it to city council over the summer, we would sort of hand it to them later in the summer in hopes that it would come up in the meeting right before the second Monday in October. And it did. So that's a sort of an overview of how that process went.
Support on the commission was universal or
universal,
close to it?
Universal, absolutely, yes.
And the city council passed it unanimously.
They did.
I was going to ask you about other cities who are doing similar things, and especially if you know of other cities in Michigan. Can you cite some examples?
Traverse City and I believe Ann Arbor are both cited in the resolution itself. A couple major cities in the U.S. that have done it would be Seattle and San Francisco.
Aside from this resolution, how will the city of East Lansing observe Indigenous Peoples Day?
I believe that the district court and City Hall is closed this Monday in observance of Indigenous Peoples Day, according to the signs posted on the doors of City Hall. So that's sort of exciting.
What might you say to those who see this sort of a thing as an example of political correctness run rampant?
I think I'd say that in general, political correctness is also sort of politeness. But I also don't think this is necessarily a matter of being politically correct. It's a matter of deciding to elevate one set of voices that are traditionally silenced rather than a sort of not correct version of history to begin with. I think you could argue that it's simply being more historically accurate as opposed to being quote-unquote politically correct.
MSU International Relations Senior Julia Christensen is a member of the East Lansing Human Relations Commission. Thank you.
Thank you. It was nice to be here.
We're also talking with Cassandra Chavranoff. She's a world politics senior at MSU. Cassandra co-chairs the MSU North American Indigenous Student Organization's Indigenous Peoples Day events. Cassandra, welcome to Current State.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask you at the beginning here to talk about the North American Indigenous Student Organization on campus. How many students are involved?
Yeah, so for the North American Indigenous Student Organization, we have right now maybe about 10 active members, and that's actually, I'm really proud to say that we have 10 active members just because we do represent such a small population on campus. We're like 0.02% of the population. I think there's only 115 Native students on campus. So, we represent that marginalized group on campus. We put on cultural events, historical learning events. Every year we put on the Powwow of Life. So I don't know if you've heard of that, but it's one of the largest student-run programs on campus that's done here.
Is the group made up only of Indigenous students? Are there allies who aren't themselves Indigenous that are
Absolutely.
Involved?
Yeah, NASO is open up to everyone on our e-board. We do have, I think out of the 10, I think maybe 7, myself included, are Indigenous. So it's very inclusive. Everyone's Indigenous to somewhere.
What's your own heritage?
I am a descendant, so I'm not a tribal member of the Saginaw Chippewa Indian tribe, but my mother is a member, so just a descendant.
Okay, you're from Michigan?
Yes.
Okay.
Frankenmuth.
What's been the student reaction to this resolution in the city of East Lansing to observe Indigenous Peoples Day as opposed to observing Columbus Day?
From what I've seen, I think it's been very positive. We had a lot of support come out to the city council meeting, more so than what I thought would come out to support Indigenous Peoples Day. But just seeing everyone come together and all of that support, even from non-Indigenous people, that was amazing. Because coming from such a small group, you forget that there are others on your side, and just feeling that support felt amazing.
You told the campus newspaper, the State News, that the organization usually holds a protest sort of an event mm-hmm. on Columbus Day. Does this resolution in East Lansing change that in any way this year? How are you observing Indigenous Peoples Day this year?
This year, instead of doing the protest, we are going to try to do more of a celebration at The Rock. So we're bringing out some drummers and some dancers, and we're going to bring out a speaker and just going over what Indigenous Peoples Day means to the modern Native, how we can celebrate our ancestors, celebrate our heritage, celebrate our culture in an educational setting as well, because it is we are a student organization of MSU. So we didn't feel it was right to do a protest now that we won the battle, we still have the war.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think it's more important to recognize that we are pushing forward. We are making strides as a community. We are being more inclusive. We are being more understanding of where everyone's coming from. So I think it's important that we do a sort of celebration honoring our culture rather than protesting, saying, you know, we want to get rid of Columbus Day, because technically we have gotten rid of Columbus Day in East Lansing. It's no longer recognized by the city. So we're just going to keep pushing forward.
And that's at The Rock, that everyone knows about. It's near
yep.
the auditorium building. Everybody paints it with whatever the day happens to be. You're planning mm-hmm. to paint The Rock?
Yep, we're planning to paint The Rock. We'll be there Monday night from 6 until 8, I believe. We're going to paint it. Just says Indigenous Peoples Day on it. And then we're going to have everyone come out. And like I said, we're going to have drummers, dancers, and we'll have some food. So just a kind of a homecoming to the Indigenous people on campus is what I think we're aiming for.
I'm going to ask you a question similar to one I asked Julia Christensen from the East Lansing mm-hmm. Human Relations Commission, and that is what you might say to someone who hears about this sort of story and just considers it to be the latest example of political correctness going further than it needs to, I suppose. Mm-hmm. What mm-hmm. would you say to someone who feels this is just a move towards political correctness and not really necessary? How would you respond?
Yeah, I think it's just all about educating yourself on proper history and knowing that America wasn't discovered, that people had been here for thousands of years, and we were marginalized and pushed aside and beaten and killed and raped. And I don't see how anyone could take a holiday and say, we're going to represent this man, and knowing that information, still going to go through with it.
Cassandra Chavranaugh is a world politics senior at MSU, and she co-chairs the Michigan State University North American Indigenous Student Organization's Indigenous Peoples Day events. Cassandra, nice to meet you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
For Current State, I'm Scott Pohl.
Current State on WKAR. You likely heard last week about the University of Michigan changing policy on pronouns. Students can now choose the pronoun they want professors to use to address them, he, she, or Z, if they wish. One conservative student wishes to be referred to as Your Majesty Grant Strobel. So quite an interesting little stunt. It landed him on Fox News. He's a member of the conservative group Young Americans for Freedom. Saturday was the very first time that the Michigan State football team and Brigham Young University met on the football field. Many thought it would be the ideal game for the Spartans to get back on track after losing the first two games on the Big Ten schedule to Wisconsin and Indiana, an out-of-conference matchup against a team that on paper didn't seem to match the talent of the green and white, but as the old saying in sports goes, that's why they play the game. BYU would top MSU 31-14, leaving the Spartan Nation scratching its head. In current sports, Al Martin covered the matchup, has a first-hand take on where the team goes from here. He joins us now. Hi, Al.
How are you doing, Mark?
I am well. What was the mood in the post-game press conference? What did Coach D'Antonio say to try to explain what went wrong here?
Well, very somber, Mark. I mean, as you can imagine, this is the first time that the Michigan State football team has lost three straight games dating back to 2009. So all of the goals that this team had coming into this year, Mark, you know, the motto, back-to-back, trying to win another Big Ten championship. Those goals, I don't know how you can't alter them now, because no one saw this coming, really. And as Mark D'Antonio, when he addressed the podium, you know, there were two statements that really stood out in my eyes. The first one was, you know, of course, when looking at how the season has gone thus far, he said we must handle ourselves with conviction. This is a team that is You can only go up from here now, right? There's a lot of room for improvement, and you just have to see that improvement from week to week to week here. And again, as I talked about, those goals have to alter it to a certain point. And also, the second statement that really stood out to me, Mark, was, quote, I don't want a quarterback controversy. Well, I think we have one now.
There was a late-game snag involving Tyler O'Connor and Damian Terry. Remind our listeners what happens here. What happened?
A very odd situation. Now, when you really look at this game, Mark, I don't think that Tyler O'Connor performed really in any way that warranted him getting pulled in that game, if you ask me. Especially when you evaluate the play calling, which was scrutinized directly after the game. For example, the first drive, when Michigan State gets out on top 7-0, that first drive to start the game, Tyler O'Connor throws the football 8 times. He goes 6 of 8 on that drive. Throughout the rest of the half, he only threw 1 pass after scoring that opening drive for Michigan State.
They stopped throwing the ball.
They stopped throwing the football at one point, Mark. I actually took note of it in my notes. At the 2:30 mark in the second quarter, Michigan State had run the ball 8 straight times. And I believe it led to something like two straight three and outs. So I just didn't get it. From Jim Bowman and Dave Warner's perspective, the co-offensive coordinators, I did not understand the play calling moving forward. So if you don't give Tyler a chance to throw the football, why take him out? And Mark D'Antonio, he addressed that, I mean, after the game, and also Dave Warner did as well. He said that the reason for the O'Connor change had to do with the offense not being productive. He didn't feel like Tyler O'Connor was playing that badly. But he also thought that the offense could have been more productive and, you know, why not try somebody else? So Damian Terry comes in the fourth quarter. He throws an interception, then moved MSU to its second score. Damian Terry, at the end of the day, he went 6 of 10, 63 yards. He was sacked. The interception that I just mentioned. O'Connor, 7 of 11. So similar stats when Tyler plays 80% of the game. 7 of 11, 58 yards, sacked twice, no INTs for Tyler O'Connor. So, again, Mark D'Antonio may say, I don't want a quarterback controversy, but it's going to be very interesting to see who suits up as MSU starting QB this homecoming weekend against Northwestern.
What else might change as what else has changed, if anything, going into homecoming weekend against the Wildcats here?
Well, right now, I mean, you play, I don't know if much has changed, Mark. I will say this. There's going to be a lot of conversation, I'm sure. Already it has, with Mark D'Antonio and his coaching staff, to see how they proceed forward with personnel. Because, one, first off, this isn't just an offensive problem for Michigan State. The defense for MSU has really been suspect as well this year, Mark. I mean, if you really look at that game, the MSU defense, I mean, and just overall, the Spartans have been outscored by 41 points in the second half this season, including 56-21 in the fourth quarter. They are right now allowing over 50% of third downs in the last three losses that they've had. So they can't stop teams on third down right now. And if you look at what BYU was able to do, they went 10 of 16, more than half of their third downs they converted. So it's a team problem here. This isn't just what's wrong with the offense, the defense as well. And where do you go from here now? I mean, you play a Northwestern team that isn't having a great year right now. Northwestern has the same record as Michigan State does, 2-3, fifth in the West. MSU is 2-3, sixth in the East. But looking at, again, this was a BYU team, as you mentioned, Mark, that Michigan State was favored against, and they lay an egg. Who knows what's going to happen this weekend?
Michigan beat Rutgers 78-0 on Saturday night, the largest point differential since 1939. Are the Wolverines destined for a playoff appearance? What do you think?
Now, I won't jump ahead. You know, I won't put the cart before the horse here, Mark, so to speak. Now, Michigan is a great team. Don't get me wrong. I mean, the defense is clearly one of the best in the nation. Wilton Spate at the quarterback position, he's getting better week after week after week. And not to mention a guy who's in the Heisman Trophy conversation in Jabril Peppers, who Jim Harbaugh endorsed for the Heisman Trophy. This is a kid who can do it all. There is nothing that Jabril Peppers can't do on the football field.
I know, going into last week's game, the stat that I heard that just blew my hair back, Peppers averages 20-some yards per punt return.
Isn't that crazy?
That is something else.
It's something else. Did you see the punt return that he had for a touchdown that was negated due to, I believe, a flag on the play? But, I mean, it looked like something out of a video game, Mark. Yeah. Like you were sitting there playing Madden, you know, 2016 instead of watching a real game, right? Yeah. The kid is unbelievable. But the thing is, Michigan, when you evaluate the schedule, Mark, they've only been tested by, in my opinion, one legit team. That being Wisconsin. That Wisconsin win was very impressive. Rutgers, I mean, I knew it was going to be a blowout. I didn't think it was going to be 78-0, which is still impressive. You don't allow Rutgers to score at all. Michigan is for real, but I would still love to see them play better competition. And don't sleep on that Michigan and Michigan State game. I think Michigan State is going to correct some things, and I think there's going to be a very competitive game come October 29th.
We want to get to the Lions before we run out of time, but I want to ask you about this promotion Ruth's Steakhouse in Ann Arbor had that started last week, centering around the Wolverine football team. They might be regretting this. Tell our listeners about that.
Yes, Mark. So they had a promotion. I chuckled at this. They had a promotion again, as you stated, started last week, where they would offer its customers a percentage discount based on how many points Michigan won by. So a 78-0 win, that's a 78% discount on anything you order. However, there is a clause in there. They say they would limit it to 50. So a 50% discount for that restaurant this entire week, and they've already been booked for the rest of the week, Mark. Pretty funny stuff.
Got to touch on the Lions, of course. I watched with bated breath, waiting for the worst. A lot of Lions fans did yesterday, but we were able to snap a losing streak. How were the Lions able to beat the unbeaten Philadelphia Eagles?
Well, you really have to, and I was sitting there thinking the same thing, Mark. I'm sitting there saying, okay.
This is going down the drain.
Right, same old song. Yeah. When do the Lions give this game up, especially how they started that second half? I mean, at one point, they only had 11 yards of offense going into, I think, the fourth quarter. So I'm sitting there saying, okay, they're going to give this game up, especially when Philly took the lead late in that game. But one man just had a heck of a game, Mark, and that being Darius Slay Jr. He caused a fumble on Ryan Matthews with under 3 minutes left to play. That led to the go-ahead field goal on the ensuing offensive possession for the Lions. And then to seal the deal, Carson Wentz, he tries to go for a long ball, and Darius Slay does a great job of not impeding on the receiver to cause pass interference, putting himself in great position to snag the ball away. He gets the INT to ice the game. Darius Slay, that four-year, $51 million contract that he signed back in July, certainly played off yesterday afternoon.
Slay's interception was one of the most athletic things I've seen on the football field so far this season.
He looked like a wide receiver, didn't he? Not a cornerback. I mean,
really,
unbelievable.
Really, really something. We want to thank Al Martin. He's back with more current sports here on AM 870 WKAR today at 1 o'clock and every weekday at 1. Thank you, Al.
Hey, thank you, Mark.
That's our show for today. Coming up tomorrow on Current State, last week on this program, we spoke with Tom Baird of the group Anglers of the Ausable. He criticized the Michigan Department of Natural Resources for its response to the outbreak of an invasive species, the New Zealand mud snail. We'll hear the state side of the story tomorrow with DNR Director Keith Cray. Also, the Happen Dance School in Lansing has a newly named director. Meet Heather Vaughn Southard and find out what challenges she anticipates tackling the dance troupe in the years ahead. That's all tomorrow here on WKAR's Current State. Our executive producer is Peter Wharf. Kevin Lavery directed the show today with help from Katie Cook. Also, thanks to Scott Pohl, Jamie Paisley, Brooke Allen, and Drew Hill. The Current State Podcast, your informative, insightful, and indispensable connection with what's happening around mid-Michigan and beyond. Politics, education, environmental news, healthcare, science, tech, and music. Stories from around the state and your hometown. That's the Current State Podcast, anywhere, anytime at iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast. It's ideal for dog walking. You can stay connected with Current State on Twitter at KAR Current State and on Facebook at Current State from WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. We'll see you tomorrow.